Shadowcast, Episode 30. This week's story is the grand prize winner of the Disgustipated Short Story Contest, The Definition of a Line, by Todd Austin Hunt. Todd's a self-described bizarro writer who's been publishing since 2003. His stories have lurked on the pages of The Fortean Bureau, Lullaby Hearse, Nocturnal Ooze, Alien Skin, and here in Episode 19, The Picker's Harvest. He was also the recipient of an honorable mention in the 2003 annual Ray Bradbury Writing Contest, and he was also nominated for a 2007 Pushcart Prize. The Definition of a Line, by Todd Austin Hunt. She heard Walter's labored breathing on the stairs, a sound almost muffled by the rumblings of her stomach. The dying sun through the bedroom window cast her shadow over Liam's face. With a shiver, she brushed a stiff lock of hair from his forehead. Even sick, even dying, he was a beautiful child. Walter coughed. Carolina? Is it done yet? Why are you taking so long? Carolina hissed. If you can't help me with this, if you can't show your face, shut up! She grabbed the pillow and looked down at her little boy. His eyes were shut, but the orbs were bouncing beneath the lids. Her stomach rumbled again as she glanced at his plump thigh. "Oh, Liam," she said, clamping the pillow over his face. As the boy's struggle slowed, a bright form entered the room from the darkness of the shadow. Carolina and Walter were oblivious to its presence. It stood behind the boy's head, curved like the lean finale of an eclipse. With scimitar-sharp fingers, it traced the image of a rising balloon above Liam's chest. Within that same instant, it painted a necklace around Carolina's neck, its links burdened by the weight of an anchor. Designation done, it vanished into the weak sunlight. Upon its exit, the shadow itself bulged, washing over Liam and removing the image. The bulge flattened out, and the little boy stopped moving and breathing. "Bring the knives, Walter," Carolina said. "The definition of a true line is an infinite scrape in both directions. Have you tried imagining standing at the end of that line? You will try forever, because neither you nor anyone else has ever been there. Somewhere along that line, fathoms and chasms away from the window of your eyes, spiraled the designator of fates, the instant antecedent to death's arrival. The present was his perpetual moment, and he was tugged forward by the taking of life. Each murder was a doorway through which his lithe form was permitted to the next. He cascaded through a constant wormhole of bloodshed and the imminent transportation of souls. Death was a mere blind force that needed his scrawled directions in order to take these souls to another level. Without the designator, a murdered soul was an obliterated soul, and so he moved while death chased him. In the icy waters of the Arctic, painting the fates of a baby seal and the orca that has crushed its head between its jaws. Next, a rock elm felled at the edge of a forest by Maurice Polaki for the wood stove. A stray ant drunk from spilled ice cream squashed by Signora Soledad's bare foot. Gabriella Lebron pounded and raped against the stone wall of a blood center by her father, shrieking her mother's name until he plunges the razor into her throat. A row of corn plowed down by Cook's harvester. A gornfly sucking the cranial juice completely dry from the hovering mercury bat in the shadowed valleys of Gliese, 581C. Private Coulter, blown to wet shreds stepping on a landmine planted by Lieutenant Peter Urey, a Labrador puppy dropped from an 18th floor window in Brooklyn by little Marjorie Goldberg, splattering the pavement while Marjorie snapped her bubblegum, a lamb slaughtered by her father Ray, licking his hand as the blood sprayed from his torn throat. Next, and the designator stopped. His forward motion had been halted. The knotted darkness of death, a shadow continually collapsing on itself, overcame him and drifted through the present world and vanished into a doorway that the designator could not see. He was trapped. He floated leagues above the surface of a gray landscape. The vistas were flat and vast and colorless, and certainly not warmed by the apparent pallor of the sky. The only structure to break the horizon was a colossal pillar of glowing rock. The glow had an orange tint to it, he found familiar. If there had been life on this planet, the taking of it would also have occurred, and the designator would be able to carve his symbols in the air, and thus continue. A gnawing worry devoured his ethereal being. Without his direction for death, the takers and the taken would be snuffed out forever. A colossal hand from below closed around his form and brought him down. He stood on a giant pedestal, surrounded by bars of light the color of glowing rock. The light restrained his movement. Three gargantuan faces stared into his cage. He was no bigger than the pupil of their eyes. The titans appeared to be humanoid, but their features were thick and fleshy, heavy like the stone on which they stood. Although their skin was as ashen as the air, the eyes and hair shone faintly with the orange color. The designator had never seen this species before. The giant in the middle had hair on its face and was evidently male. The female standing on either side of him had swollen bellies. The male smiled at the designator and prodded his thoughts.
Yes, they are pregnant. I am sorry if you were handled roughly. Goasha is sometimes too curious. My name is Kinard.
Kinard glanced at the female to his right, who blushed. The female to his left furrowed her cyclopean brow in anger, then quickly recovered her sullen expression.
This will be your home forever. I have waited eons to capture you, designator. The time for murder is over. The universe will now reflect the peace that we enjoy here.
How is it that your world is free of murder? The designator asked. For you to live is impossible without the subsequent consumption of life.
Kinard bared his stalagmite teeth.
Murder is evil.
You don't understand the danger of your actions. Murder is necessary.
The giant calmed.
Every life is precious.
He gestured to the column of glimmering rock.
Ages ago, I isolated one of the thousand gods of life. His power is imprisoned within the pillar, and it is enough to sustain the seven of us, as well as the seeds sleeping in their bellies. This world has long ago been sterilized. Nothing can be killed here.
The designator glared at the towering rock in the distance.
You have taken two devastating steps toward the breaking of the line. If the line is broken, the continuity of the universe will be compromised. Death will create a hole without me. I am the recycler of souls.
You are a fiend. You endorse murder. Thus, you are evil.
Forgetting the designator and the unnamed female, Kinard turned to Goasha and grabbed her wrist.
I will lay with you tonight.
The other female groaned, which made the pedestal shudder.
You have lain with Goasha for 100 nights.
Kinard didn't look at her.
Govern your anger, hag.
He walked away with Goasha, leaving the unwanted boiling in fury, glaring at Kinard's back. The designator felt his worry lighten. Waves of confused wrath radiated outward from the scorned giantess who engorged his hope. He reached out to her thoughts.
He has forgotten you, as he will forget your child.
She pressed her monstrous face close to the lighted bars of his cage, breathing heavily, then stalked off. 4 days passed in this same fashion. Before he retired for the night with his favored Goasha, Kinard stood before the designator and offered a lengthy sermon on the sanctity of life and his mission to prevent the vanquishing of it. On that fourth night, once he was left alone, the designator looked at the sky. The clouds had dissolved to reveal a brilliant canopy of stars. While he gazed at one of the brightest beacons, the star vanished. Horrified, he flashed to the bars of his prison. A few moments later, another one disappeared. Only two winked out that night, but he never broke his gaze, memorizing the celestial map. At twilight of the fifth day, he interrupted Kinard's preaching.
You disgust me. In your ignorance, you are murdering the future. You are constipated with principles that have the weight of air and hold the truth of delusions.
Kinard's orange eyes darkened. He swiveled, yanking Goasha with him to their quarters.
I will forgive you tomorrow.
Again, the unloved female was left with the designator.
With the god's power, you will never have need of nourishment, he said to her. You will live forever, raising your child, bereft of his embrace. You will watch him love the other, and that baby. He will make a nation of babies with her, and you will look on, alone and forgotten, and you will never die.
A decision clicked within her enormous head. She turned away from the pedestal and slowly walked to her bed. The designator felt the murders the moment they occurred. He was pulled by them, and the axe resulted in a complete restoration of his movement, his purpose. He bolted to Kennard's behemoth stone quarters, passing through its walls. The spurned female had a jagged sliver of rock to her throat. Kennard and Goetia lay together, blood spraying from gouged throats. Goetia's womb was savaged. He stretched his fingers and painted thick, upright arrows in the air above Goetia and her child. The murderer took her own life, and the life of her baby. Scratching out two more north-pointing arrows, the designator turned to Kennard, whose life pumped slowly away.
"Of what use is a wizard, if he is so willfully blind?"
In thick lines that burned the air, he painted an anchor around Kennard's ripped throat, and alongside that, a figure eight lying on its side. Two holes opened up in the cavernous bedroom, one on the floor and another in the ceiling. The black cloud of death surfaced from the floor, roiling in hunger, passing over the five and taking their souls to their designated levels. Outside in the darkness, the dazzling pillar of rock coruscated an orange flame which rose to the peak and flashed a thousand times until evanescing into the night sky. The designator blazed up through the hole in the ceiling, onward, onward, while death followed, a breath behind. Rosemary finished cleaning the freshly gathered vegetables from her garden in the sink. Her huge rabbit, Gargantua, hopped around on the clean tile. She laughed, set the vegetable basket down on the table, and picked up the rabbit. Kissing its twitching, inquisitive nose, she squealed, "Is my pretty lady bunny hungry?" She held Gargantua in her lap and plucked a carrot from the basket, holding it inches away from the rabbit's mouth. Rosemary frowned, cocking her head, involuntarily pulling the carrot away. What was that sound? Weird. I could swear I hear someone screaming. Shrugging, she caressed Gargantua while it greedily devoured the carrot. A hole opened in the table. There are stories that scare us, stories that move us, and stories that tap, tap, tap gently at the places we knew were there, but always somehow forgot to look. This story did that for me. It's easy, I think, to look at the surface of a thing and forget that there are things inside we will never see. It goes for places, songs, stories, and even people. It's the old saying, don't judge a book by its cover, but it's also something more, something deeper. I had a pretty good idea what most of the submissions for this contest would say before I ever received one, but honestly, I never expected this, and that is what I found so refreshing about this story. So if you like this story, please share it with someone. Copy the link, post it on your Facebook or MySpace page, write a blog about it, or simply donate to the podcast and help us keep going. Our music this week was Release by Christopher Carlson. Find more of his selections at ChristopherCarlson.com. I'd also like to thank Shannon Michaels for the wonderful art she provided for the week's episode. You can keep up with her art, as well as her blossoming writing career, at slushpilehero.wordpress.com. This episode was released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Thanks for listening. Stay well.